Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 28. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I'm here with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome.
Hi, Rob.
Peter, we are here on a Friday, the Friday before Thanksgiving, November 18th, to discuss the impending deadline of the proposed changes to Rule 41. Rule 41, it sounds so ominous. It sounds like something out of a dystopian science fiction, like alternate history, Philip K. Dick, George Orwell type, you know, Rule 41.
Well, let's give it its full name.
Yes, sorry.
If you want to be ominous.
Yes.
Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Yes. And as a primer for the audience, readers and listeners out there alike, for those that don't know, Rule 41 is basically, it's a part of the federal government's procedures for criminal courts.
Right, and Rule 41 covers search and seizure of evidence.
Yes.
Including issuing warrants, and you know, who can issue a warrant, what the warrant can cover, and so on. And a lot of legal stuff in there.
Yes, there is.
Worth taking a look at the actual rules, though, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. If you've got the stomach to read dry legalese specifications, it's basically like networking protocols for criminal investigation.
Oh, so, that's right up your alley.
So yes.
Well, as a little bit of background, earlier this year, I believe it was in April, the U.S. Supreme Court submitted proposed amendments to the rules, not just Rule 41, that cover a variety of different changes to criminal trial procedures. And one of those in particular that's gotten a lot of attention from both privacy advocates, security experts, and obviously law enforcement officials and lawmakers is Rule 41. And like you said, Peter, that deals with the search and seizure of evidence. And now, the reason it's got so much attention is because it deals with digital information and digital search and digital potential surveillance and potential hacking. And I'll just read a quick sort of excerpt of the proposed rule change. Quote, a magistrate judge with authority in any district where activities related to a crime may have occurred has authority to issue a warrant to use remote access, key phrase there, remote access, to search electronic storage media and to seize or copy electronically stored information located within or outside that district if, A, the district where the media or information is located has been concealed through technological means, or B, in an investigation of, parentheses, a computer crime, the media are protected computers that have been damaged without authorization and are located in five or more districts, end quote.
Okay.
So basically what that amounts to, Peter, is?
Right. So this is stuff that Director James Comey of the FBI has been asking for years. It's been through a three-year review process.
A very long review process.
But never been deliberated by elected officials. So there are sort of review boards and there's been public comments, but it's never been debated on the floor of Congress.
Right.
So that said, we're now at the point where as I also believe it to be April, the Supreme Court had reviewed it, turned it back, and said these look good to us.
Amazingly.
And unless Congress does something before December 1st, they will take effect on December 1st. But to answer your real question, what do those two things mean? Basically, if you're anonymizing or obscuring or obfuscating your location, and the government believes you to be doing a crime, they can get a warrant to search without respect to where the judge's jurisdiction is. So if you want to get a warrant to go onto Tor, onto the Anonymity Network. You can go to a jurisdiction where the judge will grant you that warrant. So that's one. That's A. That was the A item that you mentioned. And B is another one, which, well, you know, nobody wants people to use Tor to go and run riot and do criminal acts.
Sure.
There's horrible things that are going on all around the world, and some of them are piggybacking over Tor. So that's one thing. You know, everybody wants to get the bad guys, the terrorists, the child molesters, and the human traffickers. B, though, is, in very simple terms, if I break into your computer,
yes,
and use your computer without your permission,
yes,
to go and do something, some other crime, and the government investigators determine that that's the case, they can say, hey, you know, somebody's been using five or more, and that's the limit, it's five or more, which Rule 41 allows a single judge with a single warrant to issue warrants for accessing, for the government to access those compromised systems. So if they're looking to, say, the Mirai botnet, which we've talked about endlessly,
yeah,
and the FBI says, well, we need to investigate these systems because there may be evidence on them, the judge can grant that warrant. So the FBI can then go and look at your router, your security camera, your DVR, whatever it is that
to say nothing of your home, your PCs, laptops, phones, etc.
If those things were compromised in the course of an attack like that. So that, I think, I don't have to say, I think, I know that that's one of the sticking points for the people that are opposed to the changes. On the other hand, the people who support the changes are, their argument is, this has already gone through a lot of review, it's sufficient, it doesn't add any, it doesn't give courts additional access to search devices.
Mm.
It just gives the investigators a way to get a judge, because let's say, we've seen this in the last year with prosecutions over the child sexual abuse site,
child pornography. That's right. Right. The FBI was
right. The FBI got evidence,
control of that domain, and
right, they took control. But what they did was they took over from there. They pivoted to people who were using the site,
yeah.
And in case after case, the defendants have been arguing that they should not have had their systems hacked because there wasn't a lawful warrant, because the judge I don't recall where the judges were that granted the warrant.
Sure.
But in other jurisdictions, mm-hmm. judges are saying, hey, we got to throw this evidence out because you didn't get a proper warrant. So that's one of the key arguments in favor of going to Rule 41, is that if the FBI says, well, we know that there's bad actors all around using this site, and we think that in order to get them, we have to do these network investigative techniques and hack systems, and we can't be limited because, you know, people, they did find evidence against people all over the country as well as all over the
sure.
world.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where we are. But then on the other side, you've got issues where if the government can get a mass hacking warrant to just go where the evidence leads, they can start sort of digging through everything, because everybody's been,
yeah.
you know, there's millions of botnet devices that,
yeah.
and they're all over.
Well, and that's, you know, I'll just outline sort of the points of the opposition, including Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, out of Oregon, and we'll get into the act that's been the legislation that's been proposed to sort of counter the Rule 41 changes. But basically, it amounts to, the critics believe that this is an expansion of of the powers of the federal government, because it's sort of an open-ended way to conduct search as it pertains to, you know, digital information, cyberspace, the internet, I mean, whatever you want to call it. And in the case of, like you said, if my system is infected with malware and I have an intruder gain access, remote access to my machine, that's hacking. But now that this Rule 41 is going to give the government sort of the ability to get a warrant and do essentially the same thing to me, but under, you know, a court order. And I know it's for gathering evidence, but what if they say, what if there's an investigation into, like you said, a Tor-related activity, and they start searching, you know, for quote unquote evidence of malware infections or botnets on various machines, but what they're really looking for is you know, criminal activity on those systems, in terms of you know, their browsing habits or what data or media they might have stored on their machines. I mean, that's a pretty large swath. I mean, that gives the government a lot of leeway to basically say, you know, we've got this power and we don't really need to specify like what it is we're exactly looking for, because we can look at both the who we believe are perps, and we can investigate who we believe are victims. And you have the same sort of amount of power and capability there with either one. And that to me is a little distressing. You know, I know I kind of made fun of Rule 41, dystopian, yada, 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 all that stuff. But to think that you're going to have, you know, federal law enforcement, you're going to have criminal investigators sort of with the ability to, I guess, with impunity. And it's unclear reading the changes to Rule 41. I know there's sealed warrants. I know that you can conduct a secret search or seizure of evidence without sort of notifying the suspect for whatever reason. You have to justify it, but there may be cases where under Rule 41 where a warrant is issued to search victims' affected systems and they don't even know it, and you have government agents, you know, on your network monitoring your Wi-Fi router. And I'd like to believe that government investigators are not snooping, that they're not looking at stuff that they shouldn't be doing, that they're only, you know, it's just the facts. They're only looking at, like, for example, the activity of the Mirai botnet to trace it back to who they believe the assailant is or what have you. But let's be honest, everyone has got probably has a piece of malware code on one of their devices, if not all at this point. They've got some type of adware, some type of PUP or some type of malware or malicious code, whether it's a botnet, whether it's click fraud, ad fraud, whatever. I mean, you could get a warrant, you know, somebody could get a warrant to search my computer for whatever reason in Utah or Washington or Idaho and just say, well, I need to search this computer. You know, and that's...
And it's not even... They're not saying we want to search. Here's a list of the computers that we want to search. They're saying, here's the definition, the specification of the kinds of computers that we want to search.
Right.
We want to search for systems that may have been leveraged by an attacker or a criminal.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay,
that
sounds reasonable.
Anything.
But at the same time, you have to wonder, with access like that, our concerns are purely theoretical at this point,
sure.
but at the same time, we also know that that investigative powers that go beyond a certain point can be abused, and they are frequently abused when you know, when you get a bad actor who's in a trusted position. So, and then another question that comes up is, if they're looking for child porn, but they find evidence of something else, what happens to that?
Yeah.
And especially given what we know about parallel construction, where law enforcement gets evidence somehow, whether it's through, you know, whatever way they do, then taking that piece of information and figuring out a way that they could also find other evidence of that beside what they got from what might be a sketchy kind of a search.
Yeah.
So
parallel. Hey man, I watch Law and Order. I know Fruit of the Poisonous Tree. I know all that stuff.
Right, but see,
but it's serious. I mean, you bring up a great point, because there could be a situation where, like, let's say law enforcement is looking for something specific on my infected computer, you know, several states away, and the investigator doesn't find what, you know, any the evidence that they're specifically looking for in that investigation, but they find something else that they believe might be potentially criminal. What then?
Exactly.
Who's watching the watchers?
Right. And the other thing to keep in mind is that things that are legal today are not necessarily going to be legal tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's another thing to be wondering about.
Yeah. I was going to say, so you obviously did a story that is, if it's not already live, it'll be going live soon, about sort of renewed opposition to Rule 41, and I mentioned Senator Wyden, but do you want to give us a quick rundown of what's happening? So the deadline is December 1st, but...
Okay, so the way that the way it works is if from the time that the Supreme Court said, okay, we looked this over, it looks good to us, Congress may take action before December 1st, but if they don't, it's going to go into effect on December 1st. So now, shortly after that happened, Senator Wyden came out with the Stopping Mass Hacking Act,
right,
which would have essentially said, we're going to take action, we're not going to allow this rule change to take effect. That
didn't go anywhere.
It didn't go anywhere. It didn't really get out of committee.
Unfortunately.
The current bill that just came out, that Senator Wyden and others, Representative Poe as well, from, I believe he's a Republican from Texas, I want to say, but...
Mike Lee from Utah.
Right. It's a
Al Franken, Democrat in Minnesota. Steve Daines?
Yes.
Republican from Montana. Yeah, I'm sort of a bipartisan bill.
Definitely a bipartisan bill. And he had, if I remember correctly, Rand Paul was a co-sponsor of the Stopping Mass Hacking.
It might have been,
So the new one is different, because it doesn't say we're going to take action and say this isn't going to happen. The action they're going to take is to push it off by 7 months.
Yes.
To July 1st, 2017. Right. So rather than taking any action at this time, the only action is to say, hey, we in Congress believe that this deserves more attention and discussion by elected officials.
Not just the federal agencies, law enforcement agencies, which have reviewed it, as you noted, for 3 years.
That's right.
And the courts.
There has been public comment accepted as
well. Public comment, yep.
But yeah,
Congress, this is sort of the, from what I understand, this would be sort of the first time that it's really kind of been brought before lawmakers and with constituents being allowed to kind of...
Right. I mean... Constituents had the right to submit comments prior, but at this point, the issues are, as Senator Wyden has repeatedly brought up, this is potentially a big change and could enable an expansion of the ability of the FBI to look into devices that where the owners of the devices are not aware of the search.
Yeah.
So what Senator Wyden points out to the, you know, Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure. But as I say, the current bill that's up for consideration, or that's been placed up for consideration, does not stop anything from... doesn't stop the action from the rule from taking effect. It just pushes it off by 7 months,
right?
And gives
it's Congress postponement.
Yeah, it gives Congress a little bit more time.
Sure,
things have been pretty busy lately. So this, while it's very important, and Senator Wyden has been very very clear that he thinks that this should not happen.
And yeah, very vocal.
Over, you know, over the last 6 or 8 months since this has come up. But yes, it's right now the indications from around the internet and the government seems, you know, it doesn't look like it's gonna. It's got
an uphill battle, it seems.
Yes,
there may be some shifts. We'll see. But I mean, the time is running short. I mean, it's December 1st, and you've got Thanksgiving coming up. So if something doesn't happen within the next few days,
And since a lot of offices are going to be closed all next week,
right?
If it doesn't happen by the end of today, or maybe. Do we have time in the last? Is Congress in session in the last days of November after Thanksgiving?
Might be.
But
yeah. I don't know. Those guys barely work. Let's be honest. But yeah, I mean, so that's obviously coming up, and you have people within law enforcement kind of saying, you know, we've reviewed this. Don't worry about your Fourth Amendment. It's everything's fine, but. Clearly, there's a lot of concern, and I think you might have written about this earlier, Peter, but this could have potential implications for Privacy Shield and for other sort of international data sharing agreements, privacy agreements. And if it goes through as proposed, the Rule 41 changes, I mean, not the Review the Rule Act, that could create some serious friction between, not just between governments, but for businesses too. I mean, for businesses, especially companies that are doing hosting, that have data centers overseas, that are using cloud services, that are are transmitting or sharing, storing data for you know, citizens of various countries where privacy laws and regulations differ, and now you have a situation where, let's say, for example, there's an individual who's visiting the U.S. that's on vacation, and I mean, what do you do there? I mean, it's not entirely clear. And if you're a country and you're another country, you're reading about Rule 41, that might give you some pause.
Yeah. So what else have we got this week?
We've got a few more things we're going to talk about real quick before we wrap up. Let's start with Peter. On the subject of the government, we had two agencies, Department of Homeland Security and NIST, sort of jump into the IoT security game with good reason, with all of the things that have been going on with the IoT-enabled DDoS attacks. They released some guidances, right?
Sure.
Plural? Sure. Regarding sort of IoT security practices, not just for the device manufacturers, but I guess for the industry in general, and probably for consumers too. And a lot of it starts with, I mean, really simple stuff, like come up with better sort of factory and default passwords on your devices, your routers, your video cameras, your DVR, et cetera, all the types of equipment that can be taken advantage of by, you know, things like the Mirai botnet. So yeah, like a lot of these things were basic, you know, reading through them, but I don't know, I was glad to see, I thought it was a positive, a net positive that this was done sort of on the heels of the last month or so, probably 2 months now, dating back to September, of all that's gone on.
Yeah, it's an ongoing process.
This is like the one time I'm going to say that I'm positive on this podcast, and you barely blinked. I feel pretty good.
Well,
that they're taking this, and you know me, I have. It's not possible for me to have less faith in DHS. I think the agency should probably. Are they listening? Is that why you were looking at that? Yeah, I'm sure they're listening. I don't think it's
They're subscribers.
I think the agency is generally a waste and probably should be abolished. But good for them for getting into this and saying, you know, we need to get a handle on this. And, you know, we should know. We had a discussion, an interview this week with Tatu.
Oh, yeah, Tatu Elonen.
Yeah, we had an interview earlier this week with Tatu Elonen.
Elonen. He's the guy that created SSH.
SSH. And 20-something years ago. He is the founder, and I believe he's still the CEO of SSH Communications. And, you know, we were talking a lot with him this week about, you know, what they're doing to make sure SSH keys are not just out there floating around and how to do key management. And one of the things he talked about was, and this is interesting, I guess it ties in with Rule 41, but he said, you know, with all this IoT stuff going on out there and you know, obviously Akamai looked at the open SSH flaw that enabled more IoT attacks, but he said, you know, you may have to force companies to brick these devices, otherwise you're going to be taking down large chunks of the internet and hurting the economy, hurting government agencies, you know, disrupting critical infrastructure maybe. So, and yeah, with Rule 41, maybe you could do that.
Well, I'll tell you, there was after we talked to Tatu,
yep.
I went home. There, I had a little wall wart kind of
you
plug in, and it's supposed to amplify your Wi-Fi signal. I never was able to determine that it actually did anything.
Sure.
But I went and I grabbed it after, you know, when I got home. I grabbed it and I started looking at it and I was thinking, well, maybe I should just look up the documentation and go in and change the password on it and, you know, make it a little bit tighter. And then I started thinking, no, because...
You're just going to let the hackers have it?
For 15 or 30 or whatever dollar, however many dollars I spent on that little thing, I'm pretty sure that even if I patch it, even if I put a strong password on it, there's almost certainly going to be more and more holes in that. And especially going forward, I got it a couple of years ago.
So just toss it.
I looked at it, I turned it over, and I threw it in the trash, and it felt good.
Doing your part for collective information security, and I salute you, sir.
Thank you.
I do what I can.
But yeah, I mean, we're gonna make progress. We're gonna go backwards. There's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be go ahead 4 steps, go back 3. Sometimes it's gonna be go ahead 1, go back 2. You know,
I'm just surprised. I offered a rare moment of positivity, and you.
I apologize.
That's okay.
I sincerely apologize.
Well, because that positivity is going to go right out the window on this next item. In those IoT security, along with the IoT security guidances, there was a hearing in Congress about the issue of IoT security and what can we do about it. And I believe Level 3's CSO, Level 3 monitored some of the attacks on the DNS provider Dyn that disrupted some major sites on the East Coast because of these large IoT-enabled DDoS attacks. He spoke the other day during this hearing and said that, this is amazing, that apparently a disgruntled gamer was to blame for the attack. A lone gunman who was upset about something with Sony or a specific game and decided to take down Sony's PlayStation Network, which people need to play their multiplayer games online. And what did I say when we talked about this a while back? I said, if it's one of these cases where a gamer just gets ticked off, or a gamer's plural, and they decide to take down something like RuneScape or another game or Xbox Live, I said, my head's going to explode. And what happened?
Well, your head didn't explode.
My head didn't explode, but now we have a pretty credible source saying that it might have been one of these disgruntled gamers. Oh, my God.
Which is going to make my head explode, because that was a pretty serious attack.
Yeah.
And to think that some disgruntled gamer could pull that off is kind of scary.
Yeah, that's probably scarier than the other thought that we, the other thoughts that we originally had, which this is a nation state attack. This is China's, you know, secret hacking outfit testing us, and they're gearing up for a big takedown. Oh no, no, just some kid who's like, I'm mad. I got banned from some game on PSN. I'm gonna show you. I'm gonna get you now. I'm gonna pwn you. Mm. Oh man, I weep for the future. Okay, last item on our list before we wrap up. Peter, you wrote about this, I believe. Not long ago, we had a situation with Hacking Team, the Italian, I would have said spyware vendor, but surveillance software vendor is probably more judicious.
Spyware vendor to, or provider of spyware to governments and agencies.
Provider of surveillance software to governments and law enforcement agencies. They got cracked a while back. Someone hacked them and laid bare their internal documents, emails, zero-day vulnerabilities, etc., and source code. Well, apparently, Peter, there's a new sheriff in town, perhaps?
Well, it's not clear. Apparently, Italy is home to a lot of this kind of stuff, which I hadn't realized until I started writing the story. Right, so people, the researchers who were looking into this, they initially thought it was, actually the researcher who initially reported it thought it was likely to be Hacking Team code, malware, spyware, used on Android, because they found a couple of the IP addresses that were linked to previous Hacking Team command and control networks and servers. But thrown into question, into doubt, because if you look at the certificate that is signing the malware, so it'll run on Android, the certificate. This is the cool thing about computers: is you got these certificates, and they have to have an organization listed.
Yeah,
and so the organization listed was RAXIR.
Yeah,
Raxir. And then somebody looked that up, and it turns out that there's a little startup in an incubator in
Milan.
Was it Milan?
Yes.
Not Naples, because
or Naples was Milan. Milan is Hacking Team, and Naples is
Raxir is a startup in Naples.
Naples, sorry.
And again, they're doing the same kind of thing that Hacking Team will do, selling this kind of surveillance software, spyware, whatever you want to call it, to governments and government agencies. Now, they started up in 2013. They're in an incubator in Naples. They're called Raxir SRL, and their website says that this is what they do.
A secret, but
right. Do we take the information that was listed in the certificate to be true, or could it be, you know, obfuscation or misdirection?
Well, it might be. I mean, I know that Red Naga, the security firm that discovered this, they found it. Apologies if you already mentioned this, but didn't they find it someone notified them that they found this on a government official, unnamed government official in some unnamed country. They found it on their phone.
Right.
And they looked at it, and initially Red Naga looked through this and said, well, there's stuff associated with the Hacking Team, but like an IP address, but that can be obfuscated. I feel like that could be obfuscated easier than a certificate. Not that certificates can't be manipulated, though.
You can set up your own certificate authority software and generate your own certificates if you like, and you can put whatever you like in them.
Yep.
The problem is that if you put down as your organization Netscape or Firefox those are probably not organizations that you use, but if you put in Microsoft or Google or even Hacking Team, if you're generating your own certificates, then you can do whatever you like. But and the IP addresses as well. I mean, if Raxir is leveraging the Hacking Team's servers and those IP addresses, which were hard coded into the to the malware, then, you know, so we're still in the area, in the zone of lack of information. But yes, it was apparently, it was an anonymous source that contacted Red Naga, and their description was somebody who is working for a government.
Yep.
No further specification.
So it could be any government, any person.
Could be a contractor, could be a temp.
Yeah.
Who knows? But it was somebody who noticed something odd going on their phone.
With their phone, yeah.
And they provided the actual code so that, because apparently this is pretty common that researchers get told that, hey, something weird's going on. Well, yeah, because it's
no
computers.
Kidding.
It's computers.
You work for the government.
Well, no, but I mean, computers exhibit odd behaviors. Whether it's deterministic or not is hard to say.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, in this particular case, they did find something screwy.
Yeah.
And they did report it. And other motherboard was the source of the report that it was not Hacking Team. That it looked like it was this Rexier
company, yeah.
And they...
It's a good find by them with the certificates.
Yes. I don't believe they specified who it was that actually... Oh, no, they talked to two former Hacking Team employees.
Yeah, and they
who
said
told
was,
them, yeah, they, they're
it's
certain...
It's
not us. No, it's not, it wasn't... Well, it wasn't our former company because
yeah. Let's take them at their word, though. Anyway.
So.
Well, that's and it's interesting that we may have another spyware, or sorry, surveillance software player in town, and coupled with the Rule 41, we've got government hacking capabilities expanding. We've got government spyware. This is just a great time.
Interesting times.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Well, Peter, as usual, thank you for taking the time to sit in with me and discuss Rule 41 and all the goings on this week.
Always happy to be here.
And thanks to all the listeners out there. As usual, I'm Rob Wright with Search Security, and thank you for listening to this episode of Risk and Repeat, and we will see you next time.